step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 559. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined, as always, by my lovely co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. We stream this as we do every other Wednesday at KOOP.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air. Do not go away.
Hurry, hurry, and step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
It is Wednesday, March 11th, 2020. On the show today, we have The Stage and their show, Playboy of the Western World, and then later on we'll be talking to one of the performers from Broadway Across America's production of Aladdin. And of course, we will have conversations and lively discussions about the world of theater in Austin, in Belton, in New York, Los Angeles, and Phoenix, Arizona. Stick with us. Like a rolling stone.
That fiddling, that was really nice.
Yes, it's a lovely version. So
yeah.
We're going to talk about that in just a little second. So, but before we do that, I need to check in with you, Nicole Shiro.
I am here.
You are here. That seems to be your stock answer lately.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot going on. It's all I can do to be here.
There's a lot. There are plates spinning.
Yes.
Well, I would like to thank Kim Simpson and another wonderful international folk bazaar.
It's Cal Kim Rolls.
It's not only international and it's not only folk.
It's
but
bizarre.
It's kind of bizarre.
I know. You can wrap it all into one.
I'd also like to take a moment. Last week was our membership drive, and I'd like to thank all of our givers of Offstage and On the Air, and especially one, Mom Barrett, who's always so generous during our membership drive.
I know.
Thank you.
It was really awesome. It was really awesome to see co-op in the membership goal, and then to see us make our Amplify Austin goal as a city. Like, we're a cool city.
Yep.
Cool people. We live here.
Yep. All right. Let's introduce the folks that are here with us. We have Alexandra Russo. Hi.
Hello.
Hello. We have Madison Mura.
Hello.
We have Brandon Lindsay.
Hello.
Sorry, I went out of order. Gary Peters.
Howdy.
And Jacob Schatz.
Hi there.
Welcome, welcome. So that piece of music, most people will recognize as a Bob Dylan song, yes?
Yes.
Does anybody know why we've played it here on this program?
Because it's awesome.
Because it's awesome. Well, you'll also notice it's not your typical rendition. It's not his version. This is that is actually music from the Broadway musical Girl from the North Country, which just opened this last Thursday to like across the board incredible reviews.
Nice.
And so it's not your typical jukebox musical. They're all saying it's not a jukebox musical. It's not a play with music. It's not a musical. It's something that's
different. I know. I was like, well, then what is it? How's it? Yeah. What's the in between?
So this takes place in 1934 in Duluth, Minnesota, which
Minnesota.
Oh, it's bad. They got big cars there in Duluth, Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Right. So did you know that Bob Dylan is from Duluth, Minnesota? You probably knew that.
I didn't know that about him.
I didn't. So
I know that because of my history teacher, my senior high school history teacher, well, 30 plus years ago. Hi.
Yeah. Hi.
Yeah, I know.
All right, well, good. What was your history teacher's name?
That's Mr. important. Lawton.
Mr. Lawton. Shout out to Mr. Lawton.
Mm-hmm.
So this was written and directed by Connor McPherson.
Oh.
And it's interesting. They say
Connor McPherson.
Connor McPherson as I live and breathe. We're going to have our fill of Irish today. But this is...
It's the Irish in me. I can't not.
Yeah. Well, I have a lot of scotch in me.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Right now, you have a lot of scotch in you?
I do, this time of the morning. But the interesting thing about this, so most people know, or most of us in the business know, that musicals, to be a musical officially, the music has to drive the narrative. And it's usually that the character that is singing the song usually can only express what they're feeling through music. And that's not the case in this show. The music that comes out of it really doesn't have anything to do with the narrative or the character. It just sort of blends. And you would think that I would like say that doesn't sound good to me. But everybody said wonderful things about
it. Well, it's funny. Because it sounds to me how the play Sideman is, which is about a jazz musician, a sideman, and the jazz is played all throughout it during the story, but yet it's a play that has music, which they're saying this isn't. And and Sideman has its own cast album, even though it was a play.
Right.
Brilliant play, Edie Falco. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Okay, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about...
So to me, that's what it sounded like. And I'm like, but they're saying that's not what it is. So it's weird. I don't know.
So it takes place. It's like, you would think it's very depressing because it's in 1934. It's during the Depression. It takes place in that part of America that many of us, my parents grew up in the Depression. I kept hearing Depression stories growing up. But he says, this is Ben Brantley who wrote this review, says, it's ultimately the opposite of depressing. That's because McPherson hears America singing in the dark, and those voices light up the night with radiance of divine grace. It sounds pretty, doesn't it?
It does sound nice.
So it stars a whole bunch of people that I've never heard of, except J.O. Sanders is playing the lead, and Mark Kudish is in it. A whole bunch of other people. Oops. Okay. That's my... y'all can't hear that because you're not... Well, one person could hear the... My computer just made a sound.
Ding!
Ding! I'm going to read this. I don't know why I made brackets around it, but I'm going to read it and figure it out as I do it. So Ben Brantley says, again and again, one of the hapless souls on stage... Oh, this is explaining how the music works in many ways. Again and again, one of the hapless souls on stage will step up to the mic and lead... And by the way, he spells Mike, M-I-K-E. I believe that's wrong.
That is wrong.
Yeah.
That's a person.
We found a typo
well,
in the New York Times.
Maybe they've named that Mike.
That's
Mike.
True. It's the Mike with Mike. Anyway, they step up to the mic.
He might be in the playbill.
It's true. Mike the mic. Mike plays Mike.
Mike plays Mike.
They step up to the mic and lead a Dylan classic in a voice that suggests not thought, but deepest feeling made audible. It could be achingly wistful, I Want You, sung to perfection by Ryan and Caitlin Houlihan, or an improbable reborn Like a Rolling Stone with a tambourine rattling Winningham, flailing like a sheet in the wind. So other critics said... Charles Isherwood says, what's perhaps most remarkable in the symbiosis between Dylan's lyrical but earthbound voice and McPherson's own admixture of humanity and poetry, there's a seamlessness between book and score here that is rare, if not unprecedented. Roma Torre from New York One said, ultimately an intimate work, and whether you call it a jukebox musical, a play with music, or simply a theatrical tone poem, it's a ravishingly performed ode to Dylan's own poetic lyricism. And the only one that on these little quotable quotes was Helen Shaw, who didn't seem to like it. She said, he hasn't worked out how to get into songs gracefully, nor how to disguise that repetitive get-to-the-next-number structure.
Oh.
But I would like to go see this.
Interesting.
Just going to say that right
now. I agree with you.
Okay. All right. There was one other opening. It was an off-Broadway show, and it was called Endlings. And it sounds very interesting. That's something I think you would like, Nicole.
Yeah, it sounds... Yes.
Anybody a scuba diver here?
Curious and curious.
Yeah, raising the hand.
I realized that was a
as you were
mistake.
Doing it, I could see
Thank
your face.
You. Raising the hand does not work. So this is about Hyaneos. Yeah, everybody knows what that
sure,
is.
Sure.
Right?
Good old Hyaneos.
I'll drink to that.
Usually dictionary.com gives me a production, but this was not in there. The Hyaneos, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it, are women free divers in Korea. And free divers are people that go underwater to fish or whatever without the use of tanks or anything like that.
Yep. They all live in this...
Alexandra, you don't like that.
No, I don't.
Oh my gosh. What a reaction.
No.
it's a small group of, it's a community, and they pass it down generation to generation, and the small population is getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yep. Yeah. Well, this is the last three.
Mm-hmm. I was about to say it's down to, like, I think a one family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This review was written by Jesse Green, was not the most good review, but it sounded interesting to me, and I knew you would like it because, you know, divers and Asians. Right. How can that be bad?
Well, I am.
Poor
Asian,
Alexandra's going, I don't like this.
I love Asian.
you know the diving part you don't like, but there was not all that long ago, within the last couple of years, somebody hit the world record for the depth of going free diving.
Yeah, it was a gentleman, but they actually dive for not as a competition.
No.
They dive to get food, and it's similar to the divers. There's another group like that in Japan, and I can't think of the name, that are the last of these pearl divers, and it's a group. Way on the upper northwest part of Japan that do that. So it's a dying tradition that has been on and on in their cultures for years, and that they're going to lose, sadly.
True. The world goes on, though.
Yes. It's just sad when we lose the last of our things within a culture.
Speaking of losses, Broadway and the theater world had a couple of losses.
It did.
The first of which that I want to talk about oh my God, what's his name? I lost his name. Hold on.
Oh, my glasses.
He wrote The Boys in the Band. Matt Crowley. He wrote The Boys in the Band. He passed away. He was 84 years old. So The Boys in the Band, if those of you who remember, actually it came out 10 years before Stonewall, or several years before Stonewall.
Mm-hmm.
More than a year before Stonewall. I'm exaggerating.
But it came before.
It came before. And you didn't portray gay people on stage in that way prior to that. And then it was just, it never made it to Broadway. It played off Broadway, and it finally made it to Broadway last year.
Mm-hmm.
Directed by Joe Mantello, and it got the Tony Award for Best Revival.
The cast was like spectacular.
He wrote The Boys in the Band in 5 weeks while he was house sitting.
Whoa.
Isn't that pretty amazing? He also wrote some other plays. He wrote The Men from the Boys, which is a sequel to The Boys in the Band. And then he also wrote a drama called The Reasons That Remain Unclear. So those were really his only theater things. He went traveling across the world on the money he made from Boys in the Band. And it was really great that he was able to get the recognition and get on Broadway finally before he passed away.
And then he saw it, yeah.
Yeah. So the other person that passed away... is, again, I'm terrible with names, is Merwin Ford. And you may not know him, especially if you're not on Broadway. I did not know him, but if you look at the link that we have on our website, offstageonair.com, it's got a lot of YouTube videos, but he's been in a lot of stuff. Showboat, Mame, Les Mis, Beauty and the Beast, Jekyll and Hyde, my favorite. 1776, which is one of the YouTube ones, Kiss Me Kate, Oklahoma, Assassins, La Cage aux Folles, Sweeney Todd, The Little Mermaid, Addams Family, and Annie.
I was about to say, you haven't said my favorite yet.
Annie. So he was only 59 years old, and they don't
he
say
he was young.
They don't say how he died, and that
I read
he's younger than me.
I read in another article, I thought he had a long-standing illness he was dealing with, but I could be wrong. I may have read that wrong, but...
Yeah, it didn't say. So we have to talk about this, and this will bring up some discussions for everybody, is... the coronavirus and what it's doing to theater in general, Broadway in specific, and Austin as well. I know everybody here is in a show, so you don't have time to go see shows, but would you go see a show right now?
I actually will be going to see another show opening up at the same time as ours.
How are you doing that?
Yeah, the same night.
I was very fortunate that the performance my girlfriend is doing will have one night where they're performing when we are not.
Oh, lovely.
Therefore, I get a chance to go see her show.
And what show is that?
That is the Ground Floor Theater's production of So Lucky.
Okay, that's actually... not the Ground Floor Theater's production.
You're right, you're right. It's Sad Girls production.
Sad Girls production, but,
being performed at
but
the
it's being done at Ground Floor Theater. Yes, and that that opens this Friday, which we'll talk about later, actually. Well, good, but you're okay to go you're not worried about getting coronavirus.
Well, I have the benefit of being young and healthy, so I'm not particularly worried in that regard. I don't see any reason here in Austin, Texas, to be taking those kind of precautions. If it was elsewhere in the country, maybe I might have some concern.
Well, Broadway is reeling a little bit, although the ticket sales haven't slumped too much yet.
Yeah, the Broadway box office report yesterday was like still really strong, but it's the advanced sales that are already slugging.
Yeah. And a lot of people are not traveling for whatever reason. Scott Rudin is offering $50 tickets for The Book of Mormon, To Kill a Mockingbird, West Side Story, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which we were just talking about earlier before we went on, and the Lehman Trilogy. And he said, quote, "My partners and I want the building full, even and especially during this crisis." I'm interested. So that comments like that have raised questions, and mainly because it's Scott Rudin, whose marketing practices are questionable, generally speaking. but people have been saying that he's trying to capitalize on this crisis. What do folks think? Any thoughts?
Well, I suppose if I may chime in real quick, that just seems like poor wording to me. I come from an area in the Pacific Northwest that has recently been devastated by wildfires. And one of the effects coming from a particularly like theater-heavy community there is those wildfires really prevent people from engaging with the artistic elements of that community. Mm-hmm. And that has a rippling effect throughout the local economy. And obviously, public health is a major concern, but we don't want to like whip people up into a public scare when people should be going about and living their lives and appreciating the arts without fear of sounding like we're capitalizing on it.
Right.
So in this case, like Scott Rudin just needed to maybe check himself before he said this, but I think his heart is still in the right place.
I might argue with that last sentence. I don't know if Scott Rudin's heart is ever in the right place, but I do. I understand the sentiment.
Yeah, I think we should definitely always support our local theater community. And it's one of the missions of the Stage Austin, too, is to support the local theater community as a whole. And especially when we're talking about with the cancellation of South by Southwest and, you know, we're not exactly sure about public gatherings, theater is a great way to have a smaller gathering to be able to engage in conversation and support artists whose livelihood really needs it.
Right. And it hasn't really affected the local theater scene until just about 20 minutes ago. My computer is making so much noise, it's driving me crazy. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to turn the volume down on that until I'm ready to use it. It's the notifications, and I could turn it off. It's never done this before, but evidently I thought my Outlook was closed, and it's not. Anyway, so about a half an hour ago, I got an email from Jarrett Productions. They are canceling a show due to the COVID-19. And I'll just read the beginning of it. Due to the recent outbreaks of COVID-19 in cities throughout the world and locally with other gatherings and events being canceled or postponed, we have made the difficult but ultimately responsible and safe decision at this time to move our upcoming production of Mother of May to February of 2021. He goes on to say, and I'm paraphrasing, that because his audience skews older, he said some like 60% of his audience is over 60 years old, which is officially in the danger zone. He, through an abundance of caution, he decided to make that decision. But that's the only one in Austin in theaters in our market that I've heard of that have canceled anything.
Yeah, everybody's, you know, Playbill posted a great article today, Lisa. I'll share you the link. It's the, we just need to take precautions in washing our hands and taking all those different stuff. I have a 9 Broadway songs that last 20 seconds that you need to wash your hands to for coronavirus. And they give you the verses for all the different songs so we can all sing show tunes and wash our hands before we go support local theater.
There you go.
But I'll send you this article. It had some good show tunes. I was like, I'd sing that song.
There you go.
Okay, I'd sing that song. I actually agree with those songs.
So anyway, I agree with everybody. So I believe that we've, you know, you can't buy toilet paper. And people are thinking that this is the apocalypse that's about to happen. And I'm afraid, I get very frustrated with the amount of fear and panic that people are doing. And I, as someone that runs a venue, I can't buy hand sanitizer for my patrons because everybody's running and pulling it all up. So that's difficult. So we sent out an email to our patrons saying, we can't supply hand sanitizer, but please follow all the, wash your hands, do all that stuff that you're supposed to do.
Apparently, there's a bunch of folks on Craigslist you can hire to go around and spritz the things you're about to touch with hand sanitizer. So, hey, who says this economy doesn't create jobs?
So anyway, this isn't. I want to talk about the Broadway and Women in Broadway event. And this is the third year that this has happened.
So is it the third year, right?
The third year. And this year's keynote speaker was, drumroll,
Hillary.
Well, you don't need to drumroll. She already said it before the drumroll started.
I thought you wanted me to, sorry.
Hillary Clinton. And so it's interesting. Some of the things that she said, she is, as I don't know of other people that follow the news, she goes to the theater a lot.
A lot.
And she's been using it after her loss in 2016 as sort of a cathartic experience to help her center herself and either check out or check in to life, depending on what it is. As a matter of fact, she said, after the catastrophe in November of 2016, my long walks in the woods and glasses of Chardonnay got the most of the attention, but I also saw lots of shows, and boy, did that help, Clinton said. No matter what was happening, there was nothing like sinking into a seat, feeling the excitement and the anticipation as the lights went down, and being transported out of our crazy world for at least a little while. And it is really one of my most cherished roles, being an audience member. Aww. Three cheers to Hillary. Aww, she would have made a good president. She did say, she said, we're seeing the results right now of things that are going on. And said, because our next presidential debate will not pass the Bechdel test. Which indeed it won't.
The Bechdel test. That's kind of funny. She made a theater joke there.
There is a joke there. So
a theater joke.
So, Women's Day on Broadway was held yesterday, at, I think, the Longacre Theater. And there's an interesting, there'll be a link on our site to like the website that has the agenda of what they talked about. But the co-hosts were Mandy Gonzalez and Celia Keenan Bolger. And they had a lot of different panels and things like that. It sounded like very, very interesting. And at the same time, and I didn't think I printed this out, there's a list of 50 women in theater to look out for. And that's a pretty amazing list. And again, a lot of this lately has been spurred. People keep referring to Rachel Chafkin's Tony Award acceptance speech when she said that this is not a supply problem. It's a problem in our culture and what we have to do. And these, what I loved about this list of women is it just wasn't the it wasn't just performers and producers and directors. There were stage managers. Mm-hmm. There were fight choreographers. There were a lot of...
It went from the whole production element behind the scenes.
Everything. Mm-hmm. It was pretty amazing. And again, you can see that offstageonair.com. There'll be a link to that when we post the show.
Boom, boom, boom.
I only talk about this for a second only because I know you love Cymbeline.
I do love Cymbeline.
Public Theater is doing a free... tour of that.
I saw that.
Directed by Carl Cofield.
You know why I think I love it? I mean, I guess I love fairies, but it's a problem play, but yet everybody always takes their different take on it that you always see something so different with it. I don't know. I just do love me some Cymbeline. Thank you, Willie.
Yeah. So then this other thing I just love, Ruth, this happens in London at the Young Vic. Ruth Wilson is going to start a 24-hour production. It's a short play with two characters, a woman and a man, and she is going to be doing it over and over and over again for 24 hours with different men, 100 different men filling in the other thing.
Wow.
You can buy a 24-hour ticket so that you can come to anything, or you can buy specific time slot. So that just seems like a lot of fun.
Oh, Ruth Wilson is fascinating.
She is fascinating. It's
How long is each slot?
It doesn't say specifically, but I'm guessing if there's a, so if you divide 100 by multiply 24 by 60 and then divide that by 100. That's what it'll be.
I thought we were here to talk theater, not math.
That's about as mathy
Tyler
as I get.
Tyler Mack did the 24-hour show.
Yep. Taylor Mack does all
or
sorts
Tyler
of great
Mack.
Things.
Yeah, Taylor. I said Taylor. Sorry.
Blah, 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 blah. Let's see. Animal Farm.
Yeah, bizarre, crazy, right? How do you feel about this?
I feel good about it, actually.
I haven't read that book in a while. It made me go, I should pick up the book and read it.
It's Robert Icke, who did 1984, and now he's doing Animal Farm. I think that'll work.
Yeah, it had some interesting people attached to it, too. I can't remember offhand.
I don't have that. Well, the only names I have are the design team is Bunny Christie as designer, and Toby Ollier as puppeteer, which makes me think that there might be some puppets involved.
But did you see that it's touring the UK? It's not like coming here. So they're writing this play, and then they're going to tour the UK from 2022.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even know when we'll see or get, or I found that interesting.
Yep.
1984 is opening right now at the Alley.
There you go. Carolina Chain starts previews this Friday.
Oh, I know.
Which is really, really very
Love
exciting.
Love me some of that.
And then Encores. I did not know this musical. Love Life. Have you ever heard of this?
Mm-hmm.
You have.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know about it?
Not a lot.
Okay. Well, it's written by Kurt Vile. Did the music. And
there's a Jenny in it.
Lerner did the lyrics.
You'd even laugh at that. Yeah. Kurt Vile has a Jenny in everything. There's that musical about all the Jennies that are in all of his stuff. So... That B.B. Newhart did.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
I'm
just going to keep laughing at myself. Jenny!
The original production starred Ray Middleton and Nanette Fabre. It was directed by Leah Kazan and choreographed by Michael Kidd. So it had some major people in it. There was never a cast recording made of it, even though it played for 252 performances.
But when was the year they did it? I don't think they always recorded cast. Oh, no.
They did back then. This was 1948.
Yeah, I was like, wait, no, they did record all the cast.
But yeah, they did. They did at that point. So it's very, very interesting. Anyway, we'll hear a little bit of that later. Also, Where's Charlie never had a cast album, which I find interesting.
No, you're right. It didn't.
But the song I remember.
There's probably a reason for that.
The song I remember it well, that you know from your favorite show, Gigi, was originally for this musical.
Oh, Gigi.
Yeah. So let's listen to a little bit of Carolina Change, and then we'll come right back.
Good choice.
Ooh, child, gone too far. Talk like that. Talk
we
like
are
that.
Back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
Hello.
What great discussions we were having.
Yes.
I would just like to say what a very intelligent studio audience we have.
I will agree with
and
you
engaged.
On that today.
Where are they?
I was about to say, and engaged. Yeah,
and
not
engaged.
All of our audience wants to engage with us pre-conversation, so thank you.
So great. Well, now we want to talk about, we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk specifically about Playboy of the Western World, which is going to be done by the Stage Austin from March 13th to March 28th. And I'm just going to reintroduce everybody. Alexandra Russo.
Hello.
Gary Peters.
Hello.
Brandon Lindsay.
Hello.
Jacob Schatz.
Shots. Hello.
Shots. I said it right the first time.
Yeah, you did.
I didn't?
No, you didn't.
I didn't.
You did.
I did.
You had it.
I need to know. It's very important. And Madison Murrah.
That's me.
Okay. So somebody want to say what Girl from the North... I'm sorry. I'm Girl from the North Country.
I was like, whoa, you just went right back to a totally different show.
I did. To Playboy of the Western World is all about.
It's a great show. It's an Irish three-act play. It's written by the playwright John Synge. And it was first performed in 1907. So it has a little bit of a old world feel. It was a little controversial in its time, though. Just the depiction of the main character, Christy, who's played over here by Brandon. You know, he's seen as this young man who's done a mysterious dark deed, but the reaction from the townsfolk is not shock and horror. It's more just let's know more about the story. So it had a little bit of interesting reception.
It had riots.
It had riots.
There were riots outside the theater.
Yes.
Yeah,
and so it went on.
It did go on.
The show was
And this was in right around the turn of the century, 1907 in Dublin. So the Irish know how to be vocal.
Party.
Party.
It does take place in a pub. Yeah. So.
And is this production a three-act? Are you doing it in three acts?
We're doing it in two.
Okay.
Yeah. It'll be just probably about 1.5 hour show run.
Oh, so you
sorry, not show run. for each night, it'll be about 1.5 hours.
So it's trimmed down. Yeah,
it
must be trimmed down. So from three acts, which is typically almost a 3 hour show, to 1.5 hours.
I mean, we didn't cut anything. We just awesome. Have really Maybe good comedy, and we know how to, how to tell the comedy.
All right. Well, let's. And you're in the play as well.
I'm in the show as well. I'm one of the village girls.
What's your character?
I'm Sarah Tansy.
Sarah Tansy.
Uh-huh. She's very ballsy.
She's in what way?
She's brazen, and she kind of just goes after what she wants and speaks her mind. She has no internal dialogue.
We did a show where we had dogs, humans playing dogs, and that was the thing. Is like there's no internal dialogue. It just comes. It starts here and goes out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's her.
Yeah, very similarly in the show, we have humans playing drunks, so.
It's the same thing. They both start
Or the other way around, actually.
Madison, who do you play?
I play Piggy Mike. She works at the pub, and she's very fascinated by this new stranger who's come into her very small town.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And... Gary, who do you play?
I'm Michael Flaherty. I'm Pagin's father, and the
you look so
nominal...
young to be a father. You look so young to play a father.
Thank you very much. You're very kind. I'll pay you when we get up.
Thank you.
And I also own the pub. Although we've decided she does all the work, I'm just stagger around and go out and get into trouble and that sort of thing. Great. Try to keep a little bit of order in the place.
Jacob.
Yes, I play the character of Sean Keough. I don't know what the antithesis for Playboy is, but that's what I would qualify Sean as. I'm supposed to
the antithesis of Playboy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I'm supposed to marry Pagin. And, you got to see the show to see how that turns out. Or rather, in the show, you'll find out how that turns out.
There you go. Brandon?
And I play Christy Mayen, dark, lowly fellow who comes into town and... may or may not have killed his father. You don't know. You don't know.
That's the story of my life.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. We're going to take a little tangent here, and then I know you guys have a little scene you're going to do, correct?
Yes.
Before we do that, if I could get Gary, please, to give me a number between 2 and 52, that would be very appreciative.
29.
Let's see what that is.
Not a 29.
This is Patrick Page, and you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin. That's completely, that's a ridiculous accent. That's not how I really
you
sound.
You could do it again.
There you go. And
that was phenomenal.
Nicole has a little cameo on that legal ID.
I do.
You do. As
I
we're fading out. Well, you can do it again. Well, so great. Let's hear the scene. Does somebody want to set the scene up for us?
Yes, this is in the first act where we're kind of meeting some of the characters. It's before really we know exactly who this dark, mysterious fella is. And they're questioning him and not really sure if they should trust him or not.
Okay, great. So this is
he's about to arrive is where the dark and mysterious character is about to show up.
He's about to arrive. So this is the cast of the Playboy of the Western World by The Stage Austin.
Michael James.
What ails ya?
The queer dying fellow's beyond, looking over the ditch. He's come up, I'm thinking, stealing your ends. Oh, God help me. He's following me now. And if he's heard what I've said, he'll be having my life. And I going home lonesome in the darkness of the night.
God save all here.
God save you kindly.
I trouble you for a glass of porter, woman of the house.
You're one of the tinkers, young fellow? Is beyond, camped in the glen?
I am not, but I'm destroyed walking.
Let you come up then to the fire. You're looking famished with the cold.
God reward you. Is it often the police to be coming into this house, master of the house?
If you'd come in better hours, you'd have seen... License for the sale of beer and spirits to be consumed on the premises, written in white letters above the door. And what would the police want spying on me? Not a decent house within 4 miles, the way every living Christian is a bona fide. Saving one widow alone.
It's a safe house, so.
Is it yourself is fearing the police? You're wanting, maybe.
There's many wanting.
Many, surely, with a broken harvest and the ended wars. It should be larceny, I'm thinking.
I had it in my mind it was a different word, and a bigger.
There's a queer lad. Were you never slapped in school, young fella, that you don't know the name of your deed?
I'm slow at learning, a middling scholar only.
If you were a dunce itself, you'd have a right to know that larceny's robbing and stealing. Is it for the like of that you're wanting?
And I, the son of a strong farmer, God rest his soul, could have bought up the whole of your old house a while since, from the butt of his tail pocket, and not missed the weight of it gone.
If it's not stealing, it's maybe something big.
Aye, it's maybe something big.
It's maybe something big. I love that. And the poetry of the language is really, really lovely as well.
Yes.
So is this, would you classify this as a comedy, tragedy?
Absolutely comedy.
Yeah, absolutely it is a comedy.
It takes a while. It's a dark comedy, I would say.
It is a dark comedy. It's so funny. There's such a richness to the words. So you really do have to, you know, get into the cadence of it. In the playbill, there'll be a little list of glossary terms that you might want to brush up on your old Irish.
Sometimes you need that. You need your little Erin go bra.
Yeah, but it's hilarious. That's right.
Well, there is a funny thing. So it's actually written in what's referred to as Hiberno English, which is, you know, the whole idea was that John Millington Synge was going to go out and write a show to depict, you know, perfect picturesque Gaelic culture.
Sure.
Trying to diverge from home rule. Yeah, like we were talking about earlier, they didn't like that. Basically, he found a bunch of hicks and wrote about them.
Sure. Well, language played a really important part in him writing this, if I remember. Between the Gaelic and actually the language of Irish,
yes.
Which is very different from what I understand.
Yes.
So this is the stage, Austin. Is this the inaugural, actually full production of the stage?
You know, we like to think of it as the inaugural performance, although we do have two other productions that we have done in the past.
Well, I know you've done the cabaret. You did that at Ground Floor Theater.
Michelle serve it up over with you guys. And that was fun. That was great. And then we also did kind of a festival adaptation style Midsummer Night's Dream with a lot of modern elements to it. So, but this is really more of your classic shows that, you know, we have a 3-week run.
Yep.
So we're thinking of it as our inaugural show.
Yeah.
We're
excited. Well, wonderful. I love that you're doing it. You're also doing another one this year.
We are doing two other ones this year. So this is the start of our season, which we will be announcing during the show.
Lovely. Lovely, lovely. So we won't give anything away
at
this
point.
Yes,
very exciting. Lots of things.
We will be on St. Patrick's Day next Tuesday.
Of course. I would think that you would.
Oh, no. Yeah, we're having a party.
Yeah.
The show is going to be a party. We've got Guinness that's going to be there, so you have to come. We have a photo booth that we're going to be having in the lobby with lots of Irish St. Patrick's Day, little things
great
to put on.
It'll be fun. And this is at the Doherty, correct?
The Doherty Arts Center over on Martin Springs Road.
Yep. And where can folks go to get more information about the show?
TheStageAustin.com.
Awesome. Well, Facebook. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
Thanks.
Hopefully some or all of you can stick around and join me backstage.
Thank you so much.
And we'll see you in the Glen somewhere.
Aye.
That's my bad Irish. Okay. That was Alexandra Russo, Gary Peters, Brandon Lindsay, Jacob Schatz, and Madison Murrah, all with the stage Austin's Playboy of the Western World by John Millington Synge, playing March 13th through 28th. At Doherty Arts Center. For more information, thestageaustin.com. And this is from a show called The Irish and How They Got That Way.
But I tell you, boys, Paddy Kelly is my name.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. Nicole can't answer because she's just run off to make a quick phone call. But here I am, and I'm actually kind of solo. There's somebody asking to get you can leave if you want. You can stay, and you can talk to me if you wanted. But he's going. So I'll talk to myself. Oh, great. Thank you. Hold on. Let me make sure your microphone is on. And that's Jacob, who I've been referring to this whole time. So one thing I want to talk about locally is exactly actually you're the perfect person to be here because I was going to highlight So Lucky by Sad Girls Production.
Oh, wonderful.
So that's a show that's happening at Ground Floor Theater. It opens this Friday. For more information, you can get information on our website, groundfloortheater.org, or I think that you could probably search So Lucky on Facebook to see Sad Girls group. And this is a primarily an Asian company. This is done in conjunction with Lucky Chaos. So this is a representative group that really needs, and it deals with bullying and all sorts of stuff. And who is your girlfriend, Jacob, that's in it?
My girlfriend is Jasmine Lane.
Uh-huh.
She will be performing the role as a guidance counselor at the school that the main character attends.
Right.
Where the main character, to the best of my understanding, as I've helped her learn her lines, attempts to get funding for a celebration of the Chinese New Year and meets some resistance.
Yeah. Well, awesome. So that's actually the place 2 weeks starting this coming Friday. Again, information at groundfloortheater.org or do a search on Facebook for Sad Girls Productions or So Lucky. Let's get into today in theater history, shall we? We'll have a look. There's a lot of stuff that happened in this day in history.
Well, yeah, hey, let's do it. Yeah,
let's
refresh
it.
Our memory.
Just for folks to know, Brandon Lindsay has joined our conversation
jumped
as well.
Jumped back on. We're here.
It's good. We're glad you're here. So going all the way back to 1930, Edward Franklin Albee II dies. He is a vaudeville producer and theater owner, and he is the grandfather of Edward Albee.
Well,
that's it.
Really?
The whole story.
That's really
interesting. I didn't know either that. 1954, the Golden Apple opens. It's a musical retelling of The Judgment of the Paris Myth. It plays off-Broadway on this date at the Phoenix Theater, and then it gets the Drama Critics Circle Award and moves to the Alvin Theater on Broadway for 125 performances. Starred Kay Ballard, Jonathan Lucas. The score is by Jerome Moras. Moros. I don't know who that is. And in 1959, Sidney Poitier and Claudia McNeil open in Lorraine Hansberry's Raisin in the Sun.
Wow.
Yeah, that was, I was 1 year old. It got the Drama Critics Circle Award for Best American Play, and it was directed by Lloyd Richards. That's cool. And in 1992, David Carroll, he was recording the cast album for Grand Hotel, collapsed and died. I knew David, except we called him DJ Carroll. He was in Oh Brother with me, but he was also in Chess, Where's Charlie, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, Wind in the Willows. And this was during the height of the AIDS crisis, and he had HIV and AIDS and died from it. He was a really great guy. Anyway. It's his death anniversary. In 1999, the revival by Roundabout Theater of The Lion in Winter, starring Stockard Channing and Lawrence Fishburne. It was directed by Michael Mayer. 2002, Manhattan Theater Club hosts a reading of a show called Sex in the City State. I really looked this one up. I really wanted to find some music from it, but I couldn't find it anywhere. This is a retelling of the Lysistrata, which we've had several other things. There was a basketball version of Lysistrata not too long ago. But it was banned at the American Repertory Theater in Cambridge. The show has got a book by Larry Gelbert, music by Alan Menken, and lyrics by David Zippel. The artistic director of the American Repertory Theater said that he pulled the plug on the script because it was ferociously obscene, much more than Aristophanes.
I was about to ask, why was it banned? Because it was obsessively obscene.
Obsessively obscene. I have banned shows from my theater, or from us producing them, because they
You'd rather not reach that level.
They hit my obscenity level. This is in 2003. This is the end of a... Was it the end of the beginning? Yeah, the end of a four-day strike by Broadway Local 802 pit musicians, supported by the actors and stagehands. It ended in the middle of the night after an all-night bargaining session. And that had to do with the minimum number of musicians required at some theaters. They reduced that slightly. 2005, during Christina Applegate's version of Sweet Charity during the Chicago tryout, she stumbled and breaks her foot, and they were going to close the show, but she insisted that it should go on with her understudy, one Charlotte Dambois, which is pretty interesting. Hold on, I didn't hear you.
We had Charlotte Dambois love last week too.
We did.
So that's funny.
And then finally, in 2011, Hugh Martin. He was a songwriter for Meet Me in St. Louis. Songs like The Trolley Song, The Boy Next Door, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, died at the age of 96.
That's a good life.
Yeah, that was a good life. He really got there.
Yeah.
And this is the birthday of Dorothy Gish, John Barrowman, who's got his own musical.
Oh, I love John Barrowman.
Uh-huh. Who doesn't?
I don't know who they are, but...
I don't know. I'm sure somebody doesn't. There's my computer making noise again. Anyway, let's go away and listen to a little of Christina Applegate in Sweet Charity.
I'm a brass band. I'm a harpsichord.
We are back. You're listening to Nicole and Lisa.
Hello.
Here we are. We're off stage and on the air. Well, last night at the Bass Concert Hall started the run of... Aladdin. And I'm going to see it tomorrow night. I'm looking very forward to seeing it. Dun, 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 dun. Never seen it. Never read it. I've not seen it in any incarnation whatsoever.
I know, and that mind boggles me. Well, genie has that 18-minute number, man.
So I'm looking forward to it. That was the James Michael Englehart. That's not Michael, though. What's his middle name?
I don't know. He's got three names.
Darn it. Anyway, but he's James is the first man. And Englehart is his last.
He's a three-named man.
But I actually had the pleasure of speaking to the person that's playing Jafar, the bad guy, in the current production, Jonathan Weir. So let's just go and listen to that interview, shall we? Yes, we shall.
Yes.
Okay, here we go.
I was quiet on my yes.
All right, offstage and on the air audience, I have on the phone with me Jonathan Weir. He's in the national tour of Aladdin. And by the time you hear this, we will already be playing here in Austin, Texas at the Bass Concert Hall. Jonathan, welcome to Offstage and on the Air.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're quite welcome. First of all, we're talking on Wednesday, the 19th of February. Where are you right now?
We are currently in Greenville, South Carolina.
Greenville, South Carolina.
Yeah,
I love that town.
Have you been here?
No.
Okay, good answer. I haven't either until now, so I love this town too. It's very green, and there's some good dining here. So.
Great.
Now, I'm really looking forward to Austin because I've been there only once before.
Okay, well, good. We're going to talk about that towards the end of the interview. I have specific things I need to cover.
Awesome.
That's a lie. I never have a plan.
We just roll with it.
But you play Jafar in Disney's
Correct.
Aladdin.
I have since the beginning of this tour in April of 2017.
Wow. You've been doing this for a while then.
Over 1,000 performances.
Oh, my. Always as Jafar.
Always as Jafar.
Okay.
A couple vacations here and there. And that
when you know something, you know something. And you also did Jafar on Broadway.
I did. I went this last fall and covered for 3 months on Broadway, so I got to experience the great broad B way,
the
and,
great white
do
way,
that whole thing, and without having to move to New York, so it was great.
Some of us like New York. And are you from Chicago?
I am based in Chicago, originally from St. Louis, but I've been in Chicago now for 34 years. I'm proud to call myself a Chicago actor, and have done a couple of these big productions and a little bit of Broadway, but based out of Chicago.
Well, that's great. Well, I moved here to Austin from Chicago. It's a whole nother story.
I bet the winters had something to do with it.
No, absolutely not. I prefer the weather in Chicago to the weather in Austin.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well,
we miss you.
I know you do. I would love to move back. I have a confession to make. I have never seen any iteration of Aladdin in any way, shape, or form. So when I come and see you when you're here in Austin, I will be a clean slate. So
for
people like me, tell us about Aladdin.
Well, it's based on the 1992 animated feature of Disney. It was directed by Casey Nicholaw, costumes by Gregory Barnes, music by the great Alan Menken. It has a lot of what people who are familiar with the animated feature and some of the iterations of that. It has a lot of the same storyline. There's some different things because it's live theater, and I think live theater is always better. And there were some adjustments that they made to this live version. They actually went back to things they didn't use in the movie, and they were able to flip them and bring them to the live version. You know, it's a grown-up story about two adults falling in love, a kid trying to do good by his parents. You know, it's got a lot of great humor, a huge amount of Disney magic and glitz. You know, the great things of playing over, well, by the time we end the tour, we will have played 43 cities.
My lord.
I've seen more of this country than I ever dreamed possible. you know, it's the great thing is in this crazy day and age of disparity and separation, you know, an audience comes together, 2,500, 2,800 audience members, they suspend their disbelief. And it's just great to hear the audience laugh and lose themselves in the story. You know, it's a lot of people think it's a kid's show. It's not. It's a grown-up story. It certainly has a lot of things for the young ones. But, you know, we always say it's a great date show and a family show. And a lot of the millennials in their 30s are the ones that are coming to see the show because this was their Disney princess or their Disney hero when they were growing up. It was their movie. So it holds great appeal for everybody.
Sure. Well, I know so many people that have seen it in New York, and I've heard nothing but great things, and so that's why I'm very looking forward to seeing it. Unfortunately, when I go to New York, it wasn't top on my list of things to go see, so I'm happy it's coming here.
Hamilton, one of those shows, maybe.
Heard of that. Although I was not able to see it in New York. I did see it in Chicago, as a matter of fact. And here it was here just recently. I'm very, very excited. And tell us about your character, Jafar.
Jafar is second in command under the Sultan. He's the Grand Vizier, which means he basically has the ear of the Sultan. But like any good Disney villain, I've played Scar on and off for 14 years on tour and on Broadway. He has a desire for ultimate power and that ultimate thirst for ultimate power. And that megalomania and ego tend to be the villain's demise. He is a it's always fun to play a character with a strong opposing point of view. The antagonist in the story and my sidekick, Iago, who is a bird in the animated feature, not an animal in the Broadway version, is a human being. And I do a lot of get up into a lot of trouble and get to come in and change the storyline quite a bit. And eventually Jafar gets his in the end, but it's great fun to play characters strongly drawn, if you will, strongly written and have a fun song where I'm trying to convince Aladdin to go into the Cave of Wonders to get the lamp, because once he gets the lamp, he'll have ultimate power.
So when y'all rehearsed this, how much did you get to work with Casey Nicholaw?
Well, we worked with the associate director for about 4 weeks. Scotty was the gentleman who was this Casey's associate director and who's mounted all the shows and sort of maintains them. Casey came in for a week. We got hands-on experience with him. And then once we were in previews, he was back in town and our 2 weeks of tech in Chicago. We opened in Chicago and ran there for 5 months, which was great because I was playing in the hometown.
Yeah, you were basically doing a sit-down in your own hometown.
Yeah, it was
That's
pretty
great.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. And then we've been on – Casey has come out 3 or 4 times on the road. To give us notes. He's very involved in the show and he has a lot going on, as you may know of his career. You know, he did Book of Mormon. He did Mean Girls. He did The Prom. He did a lot of things and as well as Aladdin and several other productions. So prolific writer, director and choreographer. But he's very hands on when he comes in. He works with the cast, gives us notes. So we've been blessed by his visits.
Well, great. Well, we're looking forward to seeing the show. Just so let's talk Chicago. How did you get involved in theater in your days in Chicago?
Well, back in the days of yore, pre-cell phones, I moved to Chicago in 87, after graduating from grad school. My wife and I moved there. We had a 10-month-old, and she's a chair of the Department of Fine and Performing Arts at Loyola. She was a professor there. I was knocking around doing my Chicago theater for a bunch of years, auditioned for Lion King in 2003 and got the second national tour of that opened and ran in Chicago for 10 months. And then subsequently, that was my first relationship with Disney theatricals. They would call me every couple of years to come in and sub in. I was a Scar in Pumbaa Standby. Eventually did it on Broadway a few times. And then I auditioned for this and got it. So that relationship, 17-year relationship with Disney as producers, and it's been lovely. I'm really proud of a lot of the work I've done in Chicago. I've done Jersey Boys and Lion King and a couple other production contracts, but the bulk of my work is been in Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago is a great town. It's a great theater town, kind of insular.
It's a little provincial in that regard.
It is a little bit, but great folks and great work. I really miss the theater scene there.
It's very vital and vibrant.
It is indeed. And so now flash forward, you're coming to Austin. This is your second time, first time?
Second time, oddly enough, in the fall of 2017, I did a voiceover for a virtual reality video game.
Yeah, there's a lot of gaming here. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's a career I wouldn't mind getting into. No. That was sweet.
Yeah.
They were great folks down there, and they had me come down there for a couple days, and I did the voiceover for that. So that was my limited experience to Austin, but I'm really excited to come back.
So what are you looking forward to here to either do, see, or eat?
You got to love the weirdness there. It's awesome. It's inspiring. The individuality, the food trucks. I was there briefly. I mean, I was busy all during the days and free at night, and this will be the reverse. I'll have some time during the day to explore. So I'm looking forward to seeing some of the sites. We always ask the locals, what's the best breakfast place? What's a good, you know, museum? What are the offbeat things to do that aren't completely touristy? So if you got any suggestions, let me know.
Oh, well, there's always lovely suggestions, but I like Micklewaits. I like Micklewaits for barbecue. It's yummy.
Okay, good to know.
Micklewaits is good, and they used to be a sponsor of our radio station co-op here, so that's good.
Nice. Well, I'm looking forward to Aladdin, and I've never played Bass Concert Hall, and you know, as we know, we're there the 11th of March through the 22nd.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Offstage and on the
Thanks,
Air.
Man.
I know you're going to enjoy your time here in Austin, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the show.
We look forward to having you.
Okay, take care.
That was Jonathan Weir. He plays Jafar in Broadway Across America's production of Aladdin, playing now through March 22nd. For more information, you may visit austin.broadway.com.
Salam!
Okay, I'm looking forward to seeing this tomorrow night. We just have time to sign off here. Stand by for Austin Monitor News next if you're listening on the terrestrial. Backstage at Offstage is there on the podcast. And it's a little piece of music. Oh my God, I totally forgot the name of it.
What's the little ditty?
It's from, no, you don't have it on yours. You don't have it on yours. No, hold on. Oh my God.
I know it's a little ditty.
It is a little ditty. It's called Tickle Me Wiggly Jingle.
What's that from?
It's from a show called Black Friday.
Okay.
But I got to read this. So this will just bring us a little over. Somewhere in the American Midwest, at the crossroads of nightmare and imagination, there's a tiny town where the veil of reality wears thin and the eldritch forces threatens them to unravel the fabric of the universe. Black Friday is a new horror comedy musical about a shopping day from hell when the holiday season's hottest new toy, the Tickle Me Wiggly, hits the shelves. Etc. So let's listen to that, and we'll see y'all next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye, everybody.
Uncle Wiley, where does Wiggly come from?
Well, he's deep down in Drowsy Town, sleeping the dreamless sleep of the dead.
But how are we gonna wake him up, Uncle Wiley?
Oh, you'll just have to pick up your own Wiggly this Black Friday.
Come on, kids, time to gather around. There's an underwater creature level 2.
Well, the curtain has just come down on Drag Fight the Musical. The story of three drag queens that get in a three-way brawl.
A la Tu Wan Fu, Patrick sure. Swayze, John
Leguizamo. A la Tu Wan Fu, yeah. Anyway, so the show's over. We're out the backstage door. We're standing out here in this very hot day next to the dumpsters, which are very fragrant today.
I was like, they're very potent today.
Yep. With us back here is Brandon Lindsay. Hi, Brandon.
Hello.
And Jacob Schatz.
Hello.
Who I'm going to continue to mispronounce. So cool. So we like it when we get a small group here because we get to spend a little bit more time with you guys. Have either of you been backstage before?
No, I didn't think so.
So I'm going to start, I think, with Jacob. What's your story? Where are you from?
So I'm from Southern Oregon originally. I grew up in a town called Medford, and then I went to school in a town called
There's
Ashland.
A Medford in New Jersey, you know.
Is there really?
Yes, yep. Exit 17.
That's another tragic thing we share with
No,
New Jersey.
Exit 4.
I was like, sorry, not exit 17.
Four. It's Exit 4.
Yeah, and that would be on the thruway.
Correct.
Not the parkway.
Yeah, you Got know it. That because the parkway has three-digit exits.
That's not true.
Mostly.
I'm exit 98 on the parkway.
Whatever. Okay.
I only know that because of one brief excursion to New Jersey a little over a year ago. Only time I've ever been. Lovely
Smart.
Place.
Smart. Smart.
It is a really great place. If you were right outside of New York City, you didn't see New Jersey, but they call it the Garden State for a reason.
Guess where Nicole is from?
Not from there. I was just born there. I should have been born in the city, but I was born at the Jersey Shore.
Anyway,
so,
you're from Medford, Oregon?
Yes, 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 yes. Okay. I moved here from Ashland specifically. I went to school there, studied acting.
Where again did you say?
Oh, sorry, at Southern Oregon University.
Okay, and what did you call it? It sounded like you said Ashen.
Oh, Ashland.
Ashland.
City.
Got
it.
Almost like it was below a volcano.
Okay.
Which Mount Ashland might
be. I was like, I think it is.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's
totally
very
a volcano. It's like I think of that mount. I think of Etna, then I think of Ashland.
There you go. That's exactly how it would go. I had the good fortune of growing up, you know, right in the backyard of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival.
Lovely.
And so
that's great.
My theater education, just like outside of school, was very, very rich, and I did not appreciate it until I really got away from there. And I thought, like, wow, like this is a town. Like the unique thing about Ashland is it is Shakespeare's like. Town, right? The storage place there is called As You Store It. My favorite pub that was built right as we were leaving was Oberyn's Pub. Oberon, excuse me.
Got it.
And so everything was just so Shakespeare themed. And you move out of there and you move to a town with, you know, greater than 5,000 people. And all of a sudden, it's a big wide world, and theater's being done not on these like huge Elizabethan stages, but in living rooms and in DIY spaces. And so I don't know. Just being involved in theater in Austin has been a really unique, very different experience for me.
So did you come straight from college to here?
I did. Yes. Okay. Yes. I tell everyone, you know, when they're like, why did you move? Or part of the people back home are like, Texas? And I'm all like, whoa. I've lived here long enough. You guys can't insult it like you used to. And I would always tell them, like, there were a couple of things I was looking for. I wanted a place that had a much more rich, like, city life.
Mm-hmm.
Still the ability to get outside. I wanted to go to a place with good industry. I was looking to get involved in film, which I did for a little bit. And then the legislator cut the tax benefits.
Yeah.
And
they all moved to Atlanta.
Mexico in Atlanta, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to get away from everyone that I knew. My girlfriend notwithstanding, we moved down here together.
Oh, you moved here together?
Yes,
awesome.
yes. And
remind us her name again.
Jasmine. And her and I, we told each other, we were like, okay, we'll be there for 5 years and then we'll move. Now we're in year six and no signs of moving.
Awesome. Well, that's great. And you've been doing theater here?
I vacillate quite a bit. I have my time where I'm very excited. I'm very gung-ho about doing theater, and other times where it's like pulling teeth. I've done 3 shows since I've been down here. I've done a couple independent films I've been fortunate enough to be cast in. And overall, you know, I've just been living life in the, I hear it's called the velvet coffin. So
I'm going to just nod and pretend like I know what you're talking about.
Do people call it they call Austin the velvet
coffin? Yeah, I've heard the term velvet coffin applied to Austin.
Where does that come from?
I think it has something to do with, velvet, I honestly can't, I really don't remember. But it was this idea that people would come here to like do the arts, but there would reach a pinnacle of success where they wouldn't quite breach into like international stardom or even national stardom, but you would make enough to drink your beer, eat your breakfast tacos, and live a good life while doing your art. And I kind of dig it.
Okay, cool. And Brandon, you're from Georgetown. I know that.
I am, yeah.
But oftentimes, if we've been talking here, I can't help but notice that you're speaking in an Irish brogue.
You just
get into your character and you can't get out, or you don't want to get out.
I'm trapped inside my character. I'm going to be like this for the rest of my life.
Well, it's very rare that you're able to get cast in a show where you're asked to do an accent, and whenever you are. Or whenever I was, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to do it and live as an Irishman for the next couple of months. So January, the first week of January,
I decided, no, I'm gonna go through with the Irish accent. And of course, it's more Americanized, because if I did full County Clare, people would punch me in the face because they wouldn't be able to understand anything I said.
I'd understand you. You're my people.
You're my people, wonderful. Too.
Wonderful. Well, then you would relate, yeah.
Absolutely. Did you go to school in Georgetown as well?
Yeah, for college? For high school, I went down and I did about a year and a half at Texas State. Uh-huh. They're decent. They're, you know, okay. No, there was such a great program down there. But no, then I moved back up to Georgetown and I've sort of been doing theater. I did theater at the Palace there, and I've now making my way into Austin, and I'm trying to branch out, and I don't consider myself so much an actor as I do a writer.
What kind of stuff do you write?
All over the place. I have a couple of westerns. I have some horror stuff. That's a lot of it's inspired by. I don't know if you're familiar with D.H. Lawrence.
yes.
Yeah. D.H. Lawrence, I love his short stories, and one of them is a pretty clear adaptation. But no, another one of my most recent ones that we're sort of trying to get off the ground is about a soldier with PTSD. So it's a bit more of a drama.
So are these plays, screenplays, novels? What discipline are you writing in?
Stage plays for those. I have written several screenplays. One feature length that is, we won't talk about, but a couple short films. And writing a novel is difficult.
Well, it's
I was
all...
just about to go, how do you even, like...
I don't. I love dialogue so much.
Do you have the self-discipline to just... I mean, how long do you write at a time normally? Do you have an average, or...?
It depends. Well, I'm definitely one of those people who thinks of it as a discipline, where if you don't write for at least, you know, 10, 15 minutes a day, you're not working your muscle. And some days you're going to get more done than others. But on a decent... On a decent day, you're able to put out, or at least I'm able to put out, a couple pages. Mostly it's edits now, because I'm going back over work that I finished, and the editing is
That's gonna be tedious.
Ridiculous.
See, when I did writing, I was so perfect that I never had to do anything. Yeah, everything was really good.
The first draft is always the best.
It is. Jacob, do you write as well?
I do, yes. I also write. Like when you're in the arts, right, and you're not getting hired, you sort of have to write in order if you want to work at all. It's a journey. You know, some stuff I've written that I felt very proud about, the large majority of it, I think, is, you know, horse manure. Lately, I've had the good fortune, right? Like, my friends and I, our favorite thing to do is watch something together and then just discuss it endlessly afterwards. And I've sort of found a really good group of people that I watch stuff with. And the way that we dissect it is very inspiring to me creatively. We just watched this Amazon Prime show called with Kevin Bacon called I Love Dick. And it takes place in Marfa, Texas. And as we were dissecting one scene of a New Yorker playing horseshoes and failing at it, and seeing how that was it was a motif throughout the entire show. But this one individual scene we were looking at, we were like, oh, this is the entire show encapsulated, right? Uh-huh. It's East Coast trying to mimic, you know, Southern or Western culture. And I had another project that was sort of matriculating in the annals of my brain. And I was all like... I broke out my phone, and just my friends and I, we sort of like spitballed some scenes together. And afterwards, it was like the next 4 days, it was nonstop just typing it out. And I think we came up with 36 pages after that.
Cool. Are either of you part of ScriptWorks?
No, I'm looking to get into that. Yeah.
They did a very interesting thing for Amplify, which I didn't see any of this, but every hour they had their playwrights, the first person started with a page of dialogue, and then the next hour another person picked it up, and it was a show that went...
I didn't see it till almost the end, and I was kind of bummed, because I was like, oh, this is a really...
Very
this
clever
is cool.
idea.
Clever, yes.
So they did a 24-hour piece with, I guess, 24 playwrights.
Oh, that's so fascinating.
So like every hour you'd get a different...
So have either of you had anything produced?
That's what we call a pregnant pause right there.
Pinter pause.
That's sort of the difficult part right there. That's the rub of being a writer, is trying to get your stuff out there and trying to get, you know, and there are discussions and as to whether or not shows are going to be produced in the next couple of years.
But then again, I'm young. I don't necessarily need my stuff out there so much as I need to help other people get their stuff out. And when my time comes, then my time comes. And then
it's a very altruistic way of looking at things.
Well, artists help each other, and that's why I act and stuff, is so I can meet other people and help them do their stuff. And then, yeah, when it's my turn to come up to bat, there we go.
Either of you do musicals? I mean, at Georgetown Palace, that's almost what they do all the time.
I have done, I did MAME there, which is really funny because I did that with my little brother. Mm-hmm. We played younger and older Patrick Dennis.
Okay, cool.
That's really funny.
It was so wonderful.
I love MAME.
It's such a good show.
I love MAME so much.
And it was one of his first, I think that was his first principal role, which is really funny. And watching him grow, because he did Tommy over here.
At City Theater?
Yeah, City, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's grown into such a young actor as well. But see, I did MAME there. We did My Fair Lady, which was a phenomenal show. That was really well done. And then Mary Poppins, and I forget what else I did there. But I think that's all I've done there in the recent years. But I do enjoy a good musical.
Jacob, you in musicals?
Oh, I love musicals, and I've never I haven't been in one since I was in high school, and I don't have the voice for it. I wish
there are people that teach voice lessons.
Yeah, I've gone to a couple of them, and and they all ran away screaming, crying, and with a new guy in life.
I doubt that.
There are some musicals that have roles where you don't have to sing.
That's very true. I had the good fortune when I was in high school of doing a production of The Fantastics. And Fiddler on the Roof, both wonderful shows. But when I was in doubt about my musical ability, I turned to Shakespeare, and I fell in love with the lyricality of the spoken
word.
It's
like music.
It is like music, and we're very lucky with the Playboy of the Western World that show is very, very lyrical as well. So that turned out to be really fun. And then as far as your producing question, I've never had anything produced. I've produced my own stuff before, and that's always
been a
delight. Yeah, I guess.
Then I would say yes, you've had something produced. Yes.
So yeah, there you go. I am a sometimes producer and a wannabe singer.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining us backstage.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yes, very much. Even with the stinky and the hot and the whole nine yards, you're here.
It's the only place I fit in.
And you know what? And right here, backstage, is a place that we can open a new window.
We can.
All right. We'll see you guys.
Travel a new highway that's never been tried before. Before your time to a go fellow.